You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Katie Frankowitz. Officials in the coastal city of Newport, Oregon, say federal immigration officials may be planning to set up an outpost. Dirk Vanderhart reports.
Since late last week, officials with the city of Newport have been trying to confirm rumors that U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has its sights on their town. City officials have few facts, but on Monday they rang the alarm anyway. In a statement, Newport leaders said they had credible information ICE wants to expand on the coast and that it's looking at the city-owned airport to do so. There are two clues this might be the case. The first is that the U.S. Coast Guard recently relocated a rescue helicopter it has long kept in Newport. The second is that the city received an inquiry from a contractor looking to lease land at the airport for an unnamed government agency. Local, state, and congressional officials all told OPB the federal government has stonewalled their requests for details. I'm Dirk Vanderhart reporting.
This news out of Newport comes after ICE agents detained at least six people near Seaside in Clatsop County over the weekend. On Monday, the Seaside School District saw decreased attendance across all its buildings, something Superintendent Susan Penrod ties to the immigration enforcement actions. Penrod had sent out an email to staff informing them of the situation and encouraging them to continue in their care and support of students and families. When KMUN contacted her, Penrod was preparing to send a repeat of a message she had sent out to parents earlier this year, which provided information about Oregon's status as a sanctuary state, judicial warrants versus federal warrants, and other information. In the message on Monday, Penrod re-emphasized the district's support of families and students and provided information about local organizations like Consejo Hispano. She also asked parents to make sure their emergency contact information was up to date. Moving now to news out of Pacific County, Washington, flooding in Raymond last week came at the perfect time for researchers looking to better understand the Willapa River. During the king tide season late every fall, river levels can push above 12 feet. Last week, the river topped its bank and swallowed part of U.S. Highway 101 at Ocean Avenue. Researchers with the University of Washington installed flood gauges right ahead of the flood event. At the peak of the flooding, Alex Hormer Devine, a civil and environmental engineering professor, predicted that the river went up a foot and a half above what had been forecasted. The gauges will remain in place for the next 4 months. The flood study will look at how variables at which locations contribute to flooding on the Willapa River. Scott McDougall, the director of the Pacific County Emergency Management Agency, hopes similar research will be conducted on the Nacelle River in the future. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. The north shore of Willapa Bay in Pacific County has eroded faster than any other on the U.S. Pacific coast. But recent initiatives aim to change that narrative. One highly anticipated project recently landed nearly $13 million in federal funding. The Pacific Conservation District announced it is now preparing to begin work on a new project meant to control erosion in North Cove. Here, in recent decades, the so-called Washaway Beach has been hammered by winter storms, tidal currents, and ocean waves, and has lost up to 100 feet of land each year. The project would rebuild the sandy beach through an approach called dynamic revetment, a nature-based approach that uses materials like small rocks, anchored wood, and native vegetation to absorb wave energy. The design of the project will be guided by both a technical advisory team and a community advisory team. The first community advisory team meeting will be held on Tuesday, November 18th at 6 p.m. at the North Willapa Harbor Grange in Grayland. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. Turning now to regional news, the U.S. Supreme Court sided with the Trump administration to temporarily block funding for food stamps. NWPB's Renee Diaz tells us about how this could impact farmers' markets.
Whether people will be able to receive their SNAP benefits is still up in the air because of the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Here in Yakima County, more than 57,000 people rely on SNAP. This county has the highest percent of residents receiving food stamps in Washington. Heidi Wisham is the manager for the downtown Yakima Farmers Market. She says loss of SNAP funding impacts the valley.
Not only are the people in our community not able to redeem those, it's then going to affect our farmers. There was over $20,000 in SNAP sales this year.
She says that money keeps small farms running and encourages people to get local fresh produce. People can normally use their SNAP benefits at the farmers market. I'm Renee Diaz reporting.
Washington State Attorney General Nick Brown and 18 other state and city attorneys general sent a letter to the Federal Communications Commission. They are demanding the FCC publish an order that would expand what languages emergency alerts are broadcast in. NWPB's Johanna Bejarano reports.
The multilingual alerts order was adopted 10 months ago. It would expand wireless emergency alerts to the 13 most commonly spoken languages in the U.S. The alerts are already broadcast in English and Spanish. There would also be alerts in American Sign Language, but the Commission has yet to publish the order. The attorneys general say this is unlawful. In their letter, they give the FCC a 30-day deadline to publish it or face legal actions. The Federal Communications Commission didn't respond to inquiries about the letter. I'm Johanna Bejarano reporting.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek has signed a multi-billion-dollar road funding bill into law, but opponents say they'll try to block taxes in the bill from taking effect. Dirk Vanderhart reports.
There was never any doubt Kotek would sign the transportation bill. The governor called lawmakers into special session earlier this year specifically to pass it. The question has been when Kotek would sign the law. Now that she has, opponents can get to work. A group of Republican lawmakers says they'll ask voters to overturn taxes included in the bill. Those include a 6-cent increase to the state's gas tax, higher vehicle registration fees, and a doubling of a payroll tax that funds public transit. To force a vote on the increases, opponents need to collect around 78,000 signatures by the end of December. If they succeed, voters will get the final say on whether the taxes become law. That could put the state in an awkward position. Without hundreds of millions of dollars in new revenue from the bill, Kotek has said Oregon would need to lay off hundreds of transportation workers. I'm Dirk Vanderhart reporting.
I'm Sylvia Thorpe. You're listening to KMUN. Oregon taxpayers can expect a $1.4 billion refund when they file next year. As Dirk Vanderhart reports, that's because of the state's unique kicker law.
It's been clear for months that a kicker refund is coming, but state officials have now finalized the amount of that payment. The kicker is triggered whenever personal income taxes during a 2-year budget cycle come in at least 2% higher than economists expected. The $1.4 billion that will flow back to taxpayers via tax credits next year is the fourth largest kicker refund Oregon has seen, and it marks the sixth consecutive budget cycle that a kicker has been triggered. But change may be afoot. Last year, Oregon's newly hired chief economist tweaked the state's model for predicting tax revenues. The economist, Carl Riccadonna, says the change will make kickers less likely in the future. I'm Dirk Vanderhart reporting.
Some of Central Oregon's high mountain roads are closing this month, while recreation areas are getting ready for winter tourism. Catherine Steyer-Martinez reports.
Paulina Lakes Road and Cascade Lakes Highway are closing on November 18th. That means that Mount Bachelor's opening day and the start of winter tourism aren't far off. Tourism's a big industry in Bend. Last year, tourists brought in over $384 million. A significant amount is brought in during the summer, but that hasn't always been the case. According to the International Skiing History Association, Mount Bachelor and winter tourism helped Bend become a year-round recreation destination in the state. Jeff Knapp's the CEO for Visit Bend, and an obvious booster of the region.
I just think that there's not another place in Oregon where you get the type of winter experience that you get in Central Oregon.
Mount Bachelor is set to open the day after Thanksgiving, provided there's enough snow on the ground. Catherine Steyer-Martinez reporting.
This is the time of year when trees are losing their leaves, But for the City of Eugene's Urban Forestry Department, fall also means it's time to plant new trees. It's part of the city's plan to combat the effects of climate change by increasing tree coverage in areas that need it most. KLCC's Julia Bobach has more.
When driving down the streets of Eugene, you might not think twice about the trees lining the road. But for Eric Mullen, that's his job.
The very first tree down there by the traffic signal, that one had been hit by a car and looked like maybe part of the root system had broken and was laying down. So as an experiment, we decided to just restake it, and it's been bouncing back. So the resilience of trees, despite all the things that we put them through or throw at them, they're quite resilient.
Mullen is a municipal arborist for the city's Urban Forestry Department. He's part of a 9-person team of arborists and foresters who manage over 70,000 public trees. Guided by one of the city's climate action goals of 30% canopy coverage by 2040, the team is on a mission to plant 3,000 trees on street right-of-ways each year. Having more trees has shown significant improvements in multiple aspects of the environment, Mullen says. High canopy coverage can mitigate the effects of climate change, improve air and water quality, level temperatures so homeowners can spend less on heating and cooling, and create habitats for wildlife. But it's not just about randomly putting trees on the road. There is a lot that goes into street tree planting and maintenance. Spencer Crawford is the supervisor of Eugene's Urban Forestry Department. He says figuring out which trees to plant is only part of the process. Figuring out where to plant them is another.
Is it a major arterial in the street, and we really need to make space for semis to go down the street as opposed to a quieter residential street? We can establish trees with different kinds of forms that fit better in that landscape. And if the right-of-way space is really small, we can have trees with maybe more upright, compact forms closer together.
It may seem like there's no shortage of trees in Eugene and in Oregon as a whole. But in some neighborhoods, like areas that were historically flat or farmland, canopy coverage can be as low as 9%. That's a huge disparity from other parts of Eugene, with up to 67% coverage. So another goal for the Urban Forestry Department ties into what they call tree equity. Crawford and the team have been actively updating their tree inventory to create a map of every tree on Eugene's right-of-ways.
We're able to go in and do a bunch of on-site planning efforts and realize where there are gaps and where the opportunity is highest. So we're trying to focus on areas of the city where there are the fewest trees right now, where the right-of-way space for planting is the largest, so that they'll be able to give back.
One of those locations is the Bethel neighborhood in northwest Eugene. During a drive through the area, Mullen points out multiple residential blocks that are being prepared for planting down the line.
This is one of the streets that I've gone through and painted T's on the curbs. Those are areas that have been identified where we could plant trees.
But planning, especially near homes, comes with its own set of challenges. Some homeowners may not realize that their property often does not extend to the sidewalk of their street. If they build a fence past their true property line, they encroach on the right-of-way space where trees could be planted. Mullen says there are other considerations to make sure tree planting doesn't interfere with homeowners' property. If a tree isn't planted deep enough in the soil, the roots could expand and break sidewalks from underneath, and residents would have the responsibility to fix it. A new round of trees will spread their roots this month, when the soil is more moist and the conditions are more preferable for planting. But Crawford says there's only so much the Urban Forestry Department can do. Most of the trees that contribute to canopy coverage are on private land, but residents can help.
If you look outside on your street and you don't have any street trees, you can reach out to our program and see if there is opportunity there, and we would walk you through a process to get a free permit to plant a tree. You also have private space, so even if you don't have existing space outside the front of your house, we encourage people to plant trees.
He says the easiest way to reach that 30% benchmark will be through a community effort, with homeowners and the Urban Forestry Department working together to keep Eugene green. I'm Julia Bobach, reporting.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN news team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, news intern Sylvia Thorpe, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening. That's all for us today. You're listening to KMUN.